class, let's open our Bibles to the book of Hebrews, and I'll make some comments about chapter 4 here, although we will be making some other observances here and visiting some other places before we get back into the actual textual part of chapter 4 in the book of Hebrews. Now, as you know, Hebrews, we said in our introduction to Hebrews that you could divide Hebrews into five sections, and those five sections, you see some of them listed here on the board. This is kind of where we've been in the past. The first section, and each one of the sections, contains a doctrinal study and then a warning or an exhortation or an encouragement. So section 1 here was in chapter 1 and into chapter 2 a little bit. The doctrinal portion was chapter 1. Now, what did we learn in chapter 1? One of the key, or maybe the key word in the book of Hebrews, is the word better. So in chapter 1, we summarize chapter 1 here by saying that Jesus is better than what? The angels. That was the discussion in chapter 1. Then the beginning verses of chapter 2, we have our warning. Give heed, lest we parareo. Remember that word in Greek? It's the only place it's found in the Greek New Testament, lest we drift away. So that was our first warning. Then we have doctrinal section number 2 that carries us all the way over into chapter 3. And there we could summarize that section by again saying Christ is better, but now the point is made he's better than the angels and he's also better than Moses. So we're getting into a comparison with the old law here, because that's important. Because what were these Hebrew brethren with Jewish backgrounds being encouraged to do by their Judaizing friends? What were they being encouraged to do? Return to Judaism. Okay, so in the second doctrinal section here, we talked about Jesus is better than Moses. And then the warning is also found in that section. Beware lest we depart. So we've talked a lot about the ideas of apostasy as possible. It would be possible for those Hebrew Christians, those converts to Christianity, if they turn their back on Christianity and return to the law of Moses, return to Judaism as they were being encouraged to do, then they would apostatize and they would lose their soul in the process. Now, that brings us up to the third section here. And the third section will begin with a doctrinal study as well. So doctrinal section number 3 begins down in Hebrews 4:14, and it runs through the end of chapter 5. So here we are at 4:14, where we read, "Seeing then we have a great high priest who's passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God." That's where that begins our third doctrinal portion. Now, if you were with us last week, we said, now look, let's take a little road trip here. Let's take a little time out from the Hebrew study, and let's have a little discussion here about this idea of the priests and the priesthood. Now, that's important because we're beginning, this is not the first time in Hebrews that we've called Jesus the high priest. Look back to chapter 2, verse 17. He's called a merciful and faithful high priest. Chapter 3, verse 1, he's called the apostle and high priest of our confession. So it's not the first time, but this time really kind of introduces and launches us into a deeper study of the priesthood. For example, if you look at chapter 4, verse 14, it says, "Seeing then we have a great high priest." Look at chapter 5, verse 1. "For every high priest is taken among men." Then go down to chapter 5, verse 6. He says, "You're a priest forever," according to the order of Melchizedek. Go down to verse 10. "Called by God as high priest." Go over to chapter 6, verse 20. "Where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest." Verse 1 of chapter 7. "For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest." Go to chapter 8, verse 1. Now this is the main point of the things we are saying. We have such a high priest who's seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heavens, etc., etc. So you see what I'm talking about, that priests and priesthood is a strong, dominant theme of Hebrews, particularly in this middle section of the book. So I want us to have a real good remembrance I'm not necessarily calling anything to your attention you don't already know, but let's remember, let's talk about this and remember the priest and the role of the priests and the priesthood in general and how that's going to factor in to our discussion of Hebrews, and in particular to us today as Christians in the era of Christianity. So, this is what we introduced last week. In our discussion here, kind of our road trip, our side trip here, leaving the book of Hebrews and talking in general about priest and the priesthood. Now, the first thing we said, well, what is the meaning of the word? What's the definition of the word priest? Priest, a synonym, well, I don't know that I'd call it a synonym, but a description of a priest is a go-between or a mediator. We talked about that last week. And we said that the biblical definition here is found in chapter 5, verse 1. For every high priest taken from among men is appointed, now here it is, for men in things pertaining to God. So here he is. He's kind of a conduit. Sinful man, holy God, for things pertaining to God between for men and things pertaining to God. And then the rest of it goes that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. That's what a priest is. Now the second observance we made last week was it's just a historical fact that priests are found in every culture. The Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, every culture in history, even as I pointed out last week, even the American Indian. Even the American Indian had, he didn't call it the priest, he called him what? Medicine man or a holy man. Okay, and even the American Indians had this person who acted in the role of a priest. Now, the implication that we pulled out of that is that in every culture, not just in people, Bible believers, but in every culture, there seems to be this idea that there's a higher power. There's a need for someone to help you connect to that higher power. And also, the fact that there's a law there that man is not able to live up to wholly. W-H-O-L-L-Y, wholly. So we made those facts last week. Then we came to the third thing, and I wanted us to talk about priests and the priesthood in the three dispensations. So let's talk about that. This is new material here for today. Let's begin here. We know we've talked about the three eras or epochs and the ages here. The first one being the patriarchal, then you have the mosaical, then you have the Christian era. So let's talk about the priest in each one of these, beginning with the patriarchal period. The word patriarch comes from two words, pater, which means father, paternity, paternal. Pater means father, archos means ruled. So the word patriarchal, patriarch, is really father ruled. Now we know that during the patriarch age, during the age of the patriarchs, the book of Genesis, the book of Job, that God dealt with man through the fathers. So my point here is in the patriarchal period, the fathers actually acted in the role of a priest. Now, I'm going to give you some verses here that you might want to write down if you're taking notes, but that will illustrate that point, that the father acted in the role of priest, though they might not have been called a priest. They were doing the priestly job. They were the go-between. They were the mediator between God and their family and man, the one that, to whom God communicated. So here's some verses. Job, which incidentally, many people think Job is the earliest of all the literature, even predating when Moses penned the Pentateuch. So whether that's the case or not, we know for certain that Job was during the patriarchal time because of the way God dealt with him. And in Job chapter 1, verse 5, we find this. Job offered sacrifices on behalf of his family in case any of his sons had sinned. That's what the text says. So what is he doing? He's acting as a priest. We find the same thing with Noah. What happened as soon as Noah left the ark after the flood? When he disembarked the ark, what's the first thing he did? He built a what? He built an altar so that he could offer sacrifices to God. Again, a priestly function. Abraham, Genesis chapter 22, is that very familiar story of Abraham carrying Isaac up on the mountain to do what? To offer sacrifices. Moses' father-in-law. Let's leave Hebrews here and go back to Exodus chapter 18. I'm going to carry you through just a little few passages here in Exodus, but we'll begin in chapter 18 to make this reference here about Moses' father-in-law, Jethro. And in this case, he's not just carrying out priestly functions, he's actually called a priest. Look at Exodus chapter 18, verse 1. Now, let me remind you, this is still in the patriarchal period. This is before the Mosaical law was given. So we're still in the patriarch. And it says, and Jethro, the what? The priest of Midian. Midian. The priest of Midian. Jethro is actually identified as a priest. Now, this is right before the law of Moses. This is right before the patriarchal period is coming to a close, and we'll jump over into the Mosaical age here very shortly. Matter of fact, that's going to happen in chapter 20. But before we go, I want to make one reference for you that if you mark in your Bible, you want to mark this. Chapter 19 of Exodus, go down to verse 12. In verse 12 of chapter 19, in the margin, even before we read it, in the margin, cross-reference, little CF, cross-reference, Hebrews 4:16. Ooh, that's right where we're fixing to be when we get back in the text. Hebrews 4:16 and also Hebrews 10:22. Now, those verses make reference to us as Christians, to us as Christians being able to draw nigh unto God. That's what we'll talk about when we get over in Hebrews. But what's significant here about verse 12 is, what was the attitude during the patriarchal period? Look at verse 12. He's talking to Moses here. Well, let's just go back up and get verse 10 through 12. The Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them daily and tomorrow, today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. And let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Now here's verse 12 that I ask you to mark. You shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, take heed to yourself that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. God was off limits. That was the need for a mediator, a go-between, because God explicitly said, don't you come near. Don't you come near. If you even get close to the mountain on which God is speaking from, he said, you'll die. Now, we're going to come back and talk more about that later on and about the blessing that we have as Christians living under the new covenant. Leave that for time being. Come back to it. What happens in Exodus chapter 20? In Exodus chapter 20, we enter the Mosaical period. We go down to the Mosaical age here, because the Ten Commandments are given in chapter 20. All right, so then let's go on over to chapter 28. And let me make a note here. Chapter 28, we begin here in verse 1. It's God talking to Moses. And he says, now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as priest. Aaron and Aaron's sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Okay, so what did we learn right here? In the Mosaical law, God now is setting up a structure. No longer going to work through the fathers. Now he's setting up a structure that I'm going to work through the priests. And in particular, the priests are coming from where? We're not ready for the tribe of Levi yet, but in Exodus 28:1, we're told the priests are going to come from where? The sons of Aaron. So sometimes we refer to it as the Aaronic priesthood, because that's we're getting now in the early development here of the Mosaical period in the Mosaical law. And so what do we know now? All high priests are going to come from the descendants of Aaron. Now I want to stop at this point, and I want to make an observation. I got it on PowerPoint because of the importance of the note that I want to make. It's just a point of emphasis. The Old Testament priesthood that we're talking about developing right here, the Old Testament priesthood, the priesthood under the Mosaical law, served a primary purpose of extolling the holiness of God. I made a reference to that just now when I talked about God's on the mountain, and he said, don't you come near the mountain. God is holy. God is holy. We don't grasp the significance of that. We don't grasp the depth of what that is. In Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3, the seraphim said, holy, holy, holy is God Almighty. When John got a glimpse into the heavenly scene over in the book of Revelation, we see the same thing. When those heavenly bodies were saying, holy, holy, holy is God. We don't grasp the meaning of that. And I'll just give you an example how flippant we are toward our attitude toward God today. And I'm not talking about taking the name of God in vain. How many people do that? I'm certainly not talking about that. We've talked about this before. What does that mean? I don't even want to say it. But it's used in a very flippant way. People that do this, I'm convinced that 99.9% of the people that say that are not meaning to disrespect God, but that's exactly what they're doing.
No.
They're violating.
It's according to their heart when they say that. Because when they win all that stuff on TV, they excited and they want to praise God for them having this fortune.
Maybe Mary's attitude is a little different than mine. I don't know that they're really thinking about the holiness of God. That's my whole point. My whole point is we as a culture, even we as members of the body, do we really grasp the significance of the holiness of God? My point goes back to this. The priesthood here, one of the purposes of laying out the priesthood was to emphasize the holiness of God. In the Old Testament scriptures, common man could not approach God. He had to do it through the priesthood. He had to do it through the priest, and then eventually even the priest had to work through the high priest. That's the whole point that I want us to understand here. God is holy, much beyond our comprehension. I've got a few notes here that just throw out that if we continued in the Pentateuch here back over in Exodus and you come to the book of Leviticus, what's the key word in the book of Leviticus? Holiness. Read the entire book of Leviticus and you'll get an idea about this idea of holiness. But Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3, we referenced Revelation 4, verse 8. We referenced Habakkuk 1:13. You know that's one of my favorite books. And we referenced that. What does Habakkuk 1:13 say? That you are of purer eyes than to behold evil. Holiness. God is so pure, he won't even look on evil. According to the text there in Habakkuk. Okay, so let's make one more observation here in Exodus. Then we're going to move on. Chapter 28 and chapter 29 of Exodus lays out a plan for these priests, these descendants of Aaron, their Aaronic priesthood. And this is what he says you've got to go through. Look, for example, at chapter 28, verse 2. You shall make holy garments for Aaron and your brother, for glory and for beauty. Now, if you read through the whole thing, like down in verse 36, you shall make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it like the engraving of a signet, say, holiness to the Lord. If you read through this whole thing, though, you would see that there's a process that those descendants of Aaron that had to go through that was 7 days. For 7 days, they had to wash, they had to put on certain clothes, they had to do certain things to consecrate themselves to be able to serve in that mediator role between God and man. But what is all of that really referencing? The holiness of God. So I want us to think about here as we start talking about the priest and the priesthood and get back into Hebrews, that the priesthood, the way it was in the Old Testament and actually over into the New Testament, it changes. We'll talk about that in a minute. It changes, but all of it really just is an idea that God is different. God is different. God. Where's my marker? God is holy. God is holy. Man is sinful down here. And there's got to be some way that man can access God. And he does that in the Old Testament here through the priesthood. We've talked about types and anti-types. I'll reference that more as we go in. I've got a lot of examples here, but I'm going to forego those right now. That really we're talking about some types and anti-types, and we'll get back into that shortly. Let's go back to this idea and pick up the third. Okay, so we talked about the priest in the patriarchal period. Really, the fathers acted in that role. We talked about the priest in the Mosaical period. How about the third age, that in which we live? Let's talk about the priesthood in the Christian age. Do we have priests today? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We went to the beach a few weeks ago. And I was up early in the morning and I did my morning run. And I go by this huge church down there on in Orange Beach. And there's a flashing electronic sign out there in front of it. And it said, come on Saturday from 4 to 5 o'clock for your confessional before the priest. Do we have priests today in our world? Yeah. Yeah. Black suits and collars that's turned around and all that stuff. I'm not talking about that, though. Do we have priests in the sense of the truth in the Christian era? Is Carey a priest? Let me ask you that. Yes, he is. Now, wait a minute. Stay with me. He is. But I am too. And you are too. See, that's a big change. Remember early on, God said, don't you come near this mountain. You're sinful man. I'm holy God. You touch this mountain and you die. Don't you come near the mountain. Then there was a means set up that man could communicate to God, not directly, but through the priesthood. Then we come to the new law. Now I want us to go now, let's leave here and go over to 1 Peter chapter 2. Let's make some observations here. 1 Peter chapter 2. I'm going to go down and we're going to talk about verses 4 through 9 and just make a few observations here as we go. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. Coming to him as to a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by God and precious. Coming to him. Peter's writing this book. And the him that he's referencing here by inspiration is Jesus. And Jesus is called a living stone in verse 4. Now, if you go over to verse 7, he's going to be called the chief cornerstone. But in verse 4 here, he's referenced as just a living stone, rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious. And then we look at verse 5. Peter says, "You also, as living stones," plural, "you also." Reckon why the word "also" there is put in. You also. He says Jesus is a living stone, and then he says you also are living stones. Just like Jesus. You also. Now there's some people that want to put, that want to make Peter the foundation of the church. Not so. Jesus Christ is the foundation of the church. And Peter had an excellent opportunity here to inject that idea of him being the pillar or the foundation, if that were the truth. That's not the truth. He says, "You also," and Peter really has included himself in that as well, "as living stones are being built up a spiritual house, a holy" what?
Priesthood.
Priesthood. I'm looking at a bunch of priests. In the New Testament, we all function as priests. We all have that connection to God, if you will, through prayer. We can approach God ourselves without fear of being killed if we get close to the mountain, or even without having to go to a holy man for him to access. We all function in that ourselves. We're all priests. We're a holy priesthood to offer up what? Watch it now. What does the text say? To offer up what? Come on now, stay with me. Verse 5. To offer up what? Not physical sacrifices. Those Old Testament priests, when they got ready to approach God, what did they have to do? They had to kill those animals and they had to do all these physical sacrifices. That's not how we operate. Look what it says. "We as living stones are being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices." Tell me some spiritual sacrifices.
Prayer.
Tell me another one. Singing. The items of worship this morning. These are all spiritual sacrifices that we'll offer up the praise of our worship to God, just like those Old Testament priests offered up physical sacrifices. Now finish it up here in verse 5. "Acceptable to God," underline it, "through Jesus Christ." Underline it and put Jesus Christ as our high priest. Isn't that what we've been talking about over in Hebrews? And we're going to continue that discussion. See, we all function. We all function as high priests. Because what in the Old Testament, in the Mosaical law, the regular common priest, they ministered every day in the temple, in the tabernacle. But tell me what the high priest did that was different than the common priest. What did he do?
He could go into the most holy place.
He went into the most holy place how many times?
Once a year.
Did anybody go with him? Alone. To offer up sacrifices for who? All of the people, and who? And himself. That was the role of the high priest. So see, we've got Jesus who's entered into the holy place, which is what? Heaven. Jesus, see, is operating like a high priest and has entered into heaven. And we, as common priests now, operate through Jesus Christ. Is that not fascinating? I mean, is that not absolutely... it's just phenomenal how great that is. Okay, let's continue. Verse 6. "Therefore it is also contained in the Scriptures, 'Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he who believes on him will by no means be put to shame. Therefore to you who believe he is precious, but to those who are disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense." Now, if you want to circle the word "believe" and circle the word "disobedient" there in the early part of chapter, of verse 7, apatheo Remember, we talked about that before already. I'm not going back into that right now. We've already talked about that. Many versions would say belief and unbelief. But the New King James, and I think a better rendering here, is belief and disobedience. You find that same word here at the end of verse 8. And a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, they stumble being disobedient to the word which they also were appointed. Okay, so now verse 9, I want to make just a couple more comments about verse 9. But you are a chosen generation. Now look at your text, because I'm going to ask you something here. I think it's in the ESV, I think it's in the New King, I think it's in the King James, and I'm not sure about the New American Standard. My version says you are a chosen generation. Some of these early other versions say you're a chosen what?
Race.
I really wish that my New King James said race. You know why? Because I want to make this one point. There's only one race in the church. We all come from one blood. There's only one race. And Peter says right here, he says as much. He says you are a chosen race. Singular. There's no division of races in the Lord's body. You're a chosen race or a generation, a royal what?
Priesthood.
A royal priesthood. Now this opens up another interesting fact. In the Old Testament, there were two offices that were distinguished. One was the king, and one was the priests. Now we said that the priest had to come from the descendants of who? Aaron. And then later on through the tribe of who?
Levi.
We'll talk about that when we get over later in Hebrews. The priest had to come from Levi. The kings had to come from the descendants of who? David. And over in Hebrews later we find that David was of the tribe of who? Same one as Jesus. Jesus came from the lineage of David, and David was of the tribe of what?
Judah.
So we got the tribe of Judah here that produces the kings. We got the tribe of Levi that produces the priests. And they're two separate offices. You couldn't be both. And be from both tribes, that is. But now that opens up this idea that we'll have this discussion about Melchizedek. Because Jesus, like Melchizedek, was a king and a priest. And what tribe was Jesus from? I just said it just now.
Judah.
He was the tribe of Judah. But yet he's a priest. You know what else that right there proves? That proves that Jesus is not coming back to this earth as a dispensationalists would tell you, premillennialism, that he's coming back to rule. Jesus can't come back to the earth and rule as a king and a priest because he didn't come from the right tribe. He's from the tribe of Judah, and the priest had to come from the tribe of Levi. So you got a little issue there with that sort of thing. Well, here's the point. You are a chosen race, he says, a royal priesthood. Who's he talking to when he says you? He's talking to us. He's talking to the members of the body. He's talking to those people who are now a holy priesthood. A royal priesthood, he calls them. So we operate as priests, and we operate also in a royal manner. I'm not going to spend any time on this because there was a wedding over in England here recently, the royal wedding. Okay, so some people just go gaga with that stuff, and I don't get caught up into it too much. But I want to make this point. The point is royalty, a royal bloodline. Imagine if you were part of royalty. Oh, I was waiting on somebody to say that, Judy. Judy said we are. But see, what I'm saying is, what if you were a direct blood related to royalty and stuff like that? You think you'd
you carry yourself with your nose in the air a little bit more or something? Probably. I don't know.
Probably. But Judas picked up on it, as all of you have, really. We are royalty in a much greater sense. I don't care about that. You know, my brother, he's done all this lineage and find out who we're blood related to and stuff. I'm afraid of who I'm blood related to. I'm afraid of what some of it might turn up, but it don't bother me if we've got royal blood or anything, you know, something like that. What I'm very proud of is what we read right there. I'm part of a royal priesthood serving under Jesus Christ, the high priest, my king. Who is it? Somebody's pointing back there. What?
Carolyn's from royalty. Yeah,
Carolyn. I knew there was something about Carolyn. Carolyn's from royalty there, okay? All right, one more place here real quickly. Got 2 or 3 minutes to go. And I'll have to hurry, but I can do this. One more place. Let's go back to the book of Zechariah. Old Testament ends in Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. The two Z's. Zechariah is the last one. Go back to the book of Zechariah over to chapter 6. Now I'm going to finish this discussion today about the priest and the priesthood, and we're going to be ready to get back into Hebrews with a much greater appreciation for the priest and the priesthood beginning next week. But Zechariah chapter 6, verse 12 and 13 has a great messianic prophecy here. Then speak to him, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch. Do you have branch all capitalized in your version? Yeah, I do too. The New King James has got it. Who are we talking about there? Who are we talking about? Talking about Jesus. Talking about Jesus. The man whose name is the branch. That's an interesting way of describing him, though. And here's what I kind of think about. The branch comes out of the root eventually. You got the root, you got the trunk of the tree, and then you got the branch up here. The root of David. Talk about that. You know, out of the root of David, the tribe of Judah here, eventually up here is going to become something that's called the branch. And that's kind of what this prophecy is about. Now read it. Behold, the man whose name is the branch, incidentally, man is also capitalized there. From his place he shall branch out. All of those pronouns are capitalized by man, correctly so. And he shall build the temple of the Lord. Underline the temple of the Lord, and out in the margin put the Church of Christ. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the body. We're talking about his church, the church that belongs to Christ, that'll come along over in Acts chapter 2, a few hundred years down the road. He shall build the temple of the Lord. Verse 13, yes, he shall build the temple of the Lord. He shall bear the glory. And here it is, underline it. And shall sit and rule on his throne. So, underline it, he shall be a priest on his throne. The man, the branch, when he comes, is going to serve both offices. Well, that's good timing. He's going to serve the office of royalty. He shall rule on his throne, and he's going to serve the office of the priesthood. I'm done with this. Next week, Lord willing, when we're together, we're going to go back to Hebrews and pick up Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14, and we'll begin that third section of our doctrinal study. Thank you for being here.